everybody, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here with Dom. Dom, how are you doing this week?
I'm quite well. How are you?
I'm very excited because I got some big news right off the top here. First of all, as we've announced a couple times before, we have our big interview coming up soon with Richard Hatch. We're probably going to forecast that for about maybe the 14th, 15th of December, somewhere in that range, right around the middle of the month. So definitely be on the lookout for that, and we're very excited for that.
Yeah, definitely. Also, something a little bit different we've got coming up. We don't want to announce it just yet in case it falls through or whatever, but another big name coming to our show in some capacity. So we'll bring you more details on that when it's nailed down more fully.
Yeah, we don't want to jinx that for sure. But definitely, I don't know if I said it yet or not, subscribe on iTunes to make sure that you don't miss either of those episodes. And while you're doing that, leave us a rating. Why not? And thank you to the three people that have done so thus far for the last 2 weeks that I've been asking.
You also forgot to tell people to tell a friend, which I would strongly advise you do, and tell them to tell a friend as well. And eventually, you know, 6 degrees of separation, all that jazz, will have the whole world listening to us before very long.
Yeah, can't wait. All right. So actually, one other thing before we start talking about the new episode of Blood vs. Water, which is what we're primarily here to do today. Some very sad news. I'm sure you've all heard by now, or at least most of you have. Katie's brother and Tina's son actually just died, I think, 2 days ago now in a very tragic car accident. Of course, horrible news. And our thoughts are totally with them as they get through this.
Yeah, I can't imagine what they must be going through right now. I will say, though, I think we've seen a very good side of the fan community throughout all of this. As far as I can tell, the reaction has been very supportive. You know, often your community doesn't comport itself very well, but I think here, you know, they've really shown as much support as they could. And, you know, obviously it's something which that Katie and Tina won't ever be able to fully get over, but hopefully, you know, they'll be able to kind of come to terms with it in their own way.
Yeah, I think definitely it speaks very well about the fan community in general. You know, Survivor fans, typically not always the nicest people to one another, but I think when it actually matters, they definitely have been coming through lately with this and with Todd and so forth. Let's get into the new episode. And this, we've got so much to talk about. I cannot wait. And first of all, before we get into all this, we took some heat on Twitter mostly, maybe in the blog comments a little bit, that we were going overboard with how critical we were of Tyson's gameplay last episode and how overboard we were going with giving Hayden nothing but love and compliments and praise, even though, hey, he hasn't played perfectly either. Let's go ahead. Let's put this on the back burner, but let's just keep this in mind as we talk about this episode and see where those people are at by the end of this.
Yeah, now, normally I try to rein in my strong opinions when I have them. You know, I try to think about things from other people's perspectives and be the voice of moderation. Here, though, I am going to revel in the opportunity to fire some shots here because some people need their wings clipped.
Yeah, and I definitely do not ever convince myself to do what Dom does. I don't have that kind of self-restraint, so I'm par for the course today for me. So let's get into this episode, and it starts Hayden going hard in the paint at Tyson early and often this week, where he's calling him out in front of the whole camp. You know, they're just back from tribal council, and it's clear that Tyson's really the man in charge now, and he makes a very compelling pitch, I would say, and this is straight out of the 48 Laws of Power, appeal to people's self-interest, not to their mercy or gratitude, which is people presumably don't want second place, and if they keep letting Tyson stay in, second place is their best bet, and Hayden's going to make that clear to people.
Yeah, I've often wondered, like, when you're in this spot and you know that your back's up against the wall, obviously, it's very frustrating and you're under the gun and you have to find a way out. But I imagine it's also kind of liberating as well because, you know, you spent however long you've been in the game having to constantly check yourself before every conversation and always think about how to phrase things in the right way or whatever. Here, though, you can just put people on blast and because you know that you don't really have any other option.
Yeah, oh, you can really speak your mind in these situations where, because what you are arguing is really based on the truth, which, like, the reality is if these people don't do something about Tyson, they are, their best outcome is going to be second place. And Hayden can just be pitching exactly what he's thinking, which is you've got to get yourself out of this situation. And here's why it's bad for you. And here's how you can get out of it.
Yeah. And it's not something that seemed completely futile either. Like, I think Troizan always knew that getting people against Kim was never, ever going to work. And, you know, in Redemption Island as well, even when people happen to rise up to the fact that maybe they should get Boss and Rob out at some point. You know, that was always something which was never happening. Here, though, there has to be at least a glimmer of hope that maybe he can swing one or two people. Obviously, Jervis and Monica seem locked in, but Sierra at least has shown that she's willing to go back and forth in the past. Obviously, it's a very tall order to make someone actually be willing to flip over to go to rocks. But the fact that Hayden actually managed to do that is, we'll get onto this later, I'm sure, but that is That is incredible in my mind.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I was curious. I suppose we'll get more into the specifics and how he went about pitching, whoever he went pitching. But I was going to talk about Jervis. And I think Jervis, you know, in some have been arguing that he brought this up as a means to deflect the conversation away from being so uncomfortable towards his biggest ally, Tyson, where Jervis is like, hey, come on, Tyson wouldn't be doing anything without me. What'd you make of this? Because this seemed like total Bush League stuff for me. Like, let him keep going off on Tyson, and then, hey, maybe even if Tyson gets clipped, I become the number one.
I'm not sure I give Jervis that much credit, to be honest.
Right, no, I certainly don't give him enough, the credit people want to be assigning, I think, where this was, like, I am of the opinion that this was squarely just Jervis doing Jervis things. Plenty of that and plenty more of that coming up later too, specifically in the voting confessional, where this was just what was on his mind, which is he felt like people weren't giving him enough credit, and he said, hey, I want to be a winning candidate too.
Yeah, Jervis had a fantastic episode for all the wrong reasons, I thought. Like, I greatly enjoyed watching it, even though you could tell that Tyson in the moment, like at Tribal Council, when Jervis was just running his mouth and saying everything he needed to do that Hayden could twist into an argument against him for Sierra, like, you could tell Tyson was sitting there thinking, dude, just shut the fuck up, please. Have some fucking self-restraint.
Yeah. Plenty more on Jervis, I'm sure, coming up, because he had, as Dom said, a great episode here. Let's get on to Redemption Island, where Laura Moret wins this duel. It's the card stacking duel, where they have to get it only 8 feet this time. Normally it's 10, I think, when it's for real immunity. But this is the B League. This is JV, where it's Redemption Island, and they only have to go to 8. Tina also moves on, and Caleb, at the last second, his tower falls over, and Tina just sits on hers and counts down the final 10 seconds. What any thoughts on this challenge? Should Caleb, I know a lot of people are saying Caleb should have stopped stacking at a certain point.
Yeah, my feed kind of cut out while the challenge was playing, so I didn't get to really focus on the details of it. But yeah,
foreigner problems.
I know, right? But yeah, I think I saw a lot of people saying that, and yeah, like, why wouldn't you, assuming they've got the situation right, why wouldn't you just stop stacking if you have a discernible lead?
Right, obviously I feel like if his lead had been big enough, he would have known and said, hey, I'll stop stacking, so I feel like that can't have been the case.
Yeah, or at least, if you have a lead which you think could be overtaken, maybe you could just stack them flat so there's less chance that it topples over.
Yeah, some people were talking also about just stack them all flat on top of each other from the start, and that'll get you, like, probably to 6 feet or so.
Right, because it seemed like they had more tiles than previous iterations of this challenge have had.
Oh, yeah.
Where you have to use all of them to make it to the top. Here, though, they were just overflowing in tiles. They could do what they wanted.
Right, yeah. Caleb was like 6.5 feet up, and he still had about 40 tiles down on the base of this thing.
Yeah, I was thinking at the time, how far away do you think each of these stations were?
I believe, if I'm correctly predicting what the follow-up questions are going to be, not close enough that you can do anything and manipulate the other person's tower.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, even if it isn't intentional, what would happen if someone's tower just collapsed and thereby knocked over someone else's tower? You have a domino effect where all of them, like, go down at once.
I thought you meant, like, take your shirt off and start waving it to create wind.
No, like, somebody said they could just be very direct and Caleb should just pick up a tile and throw it at Tina's tower, which, that's out of bounds. You can't do that.
Yeah,
but
that
maybe
you like
could
that's
find some more subtle way of doing it. I don't know.
That seems like that would be disqualification, right?
I would hope so, yeah.
Even though it was an accident.
I love the audacity of it. Like, well, fuck this.
Yeah, you know who I could see doing that? Sophie.
Yes, absolutely. Or, like once Caleb's tower is down on the floor there, like, okay, it makes you look like a bit of a sore loser. But if it works, then fantastic.
Yeah. You know, just,
why not?
You're out, if it's Redemption Island, certainly, hey, you're out either way. If you want to just go for it.
Yeah, like, what are they going to do? Kick me out of the game? Well, yeah, bad news for that. Like, I think Caleb, like, he understood, I think, that he was drawing pretty thin to win that challenge. It's one where, again, it doesn't seem to have a discernible skill edge for any particular person. Like,
no, I agree.
Previous winners of this challenge include the illustrious Susie Smith, as well as Jerry, I think.
I was going to say Jerry Mayfield, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, so it's not something where, even though Laura and Tina have been doing very well so far, you don't come into this expecting them to win.
No, definitely. I think this is about as even as a challenge can get.
Well, okay. Maybe if you watched the promo, you came into it expecting them to win. Decided to show Caleb sitting there on the jury at Tribal Council. But, yeah, if you went into this unspoiled, then it seemed to be an even contest.
I made it to Wednesday morning without getting that promo spoiled for me and was counting my chickens before they hatched and then went on Twitter like an idiot.
Yeah, I saw that from a lot of people, actually. Like, they assiduously avoided spoilers all week, and then they had some random friend mention it to them. At which point, they're not your friend anymore, I don't think. but yeah, like, the frustrating thing about that is, even if you were just on the CBS website and you saw the thing and decided not to click on it, you would be spoiled anyway, because the thumbnail for it was Jeff at Tribal holding out his hand, clenching something in his fist, which could only be rocks with the way that they hyped it up. So it's like, they did everything in their power to make sure that you couldn't remain unspoiled for the episode. And
yeah,
my attitude has always been, you know, fuck spoilers and fuck everyone who tries to propagate them. But here, that just translates into fuck CBS, which apparently is something that a lot of people are on board with nowadays.
Yeah, I don't think that's the first time those words have been uttered on this podcast, so I think we're safe.
No, I think we're fine. What more do we have to say about the duel here? I guess Caleb, final thoughts on Caleb, I suppose? I mean, I think he obviously seemed pretty tilted when he made his appearance there, but I think just watching his Ponderosa video and everything like that, he seemed more at ease with it afterwards.
Yeah, firing some shots at Utah and Philly, I bet that...
entirely correctly in my mind, in my entirely dispassionate view as a foreigner. it's interesting that Monica didn't get any heat from him.
Well, I find that interesting in the sense that maybe he doesn't even feel like Monica is worth giving heat to. Like, he just views her as the follow, you know, the tag-along.
Yeah, and I guess also as well, she wasn't there when that five-person alliance was originally formed. So, you know, given that she's seen as this late addition to it, then maybe he doesn't see it as a betrayal from her. It's just, you know, what she had to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, too. I thought it was funny when he was on his way out how Probst basically is asking him what the fuck he's doing with Colton.
Yeah, I think he could tell that it's obviously a question he's had to answer a lot before, and one which I think he realizes he can't really give a good answer to, but, you know, it's... I mean, if it works for him, then great, and obviously he spends more time with Colton than anyone else. He apparently sees a side to him which makes him think, this is a guy I want to spend the rest of my life with, so, you know, and he seems a decent reader of people, so who's to say? Certainly not us. We wouldn't say anything negative about anyone.
Yeah, no, never, and certainly not us, at least when it comes to this. Like, I just like Caleb so much that I don't want to question what he sees in Colton, because I feel like it's got to be, he wouldn't be the type to just torture himself. I feel like he'd be blunt enough to do what he felt made him happy, and I just can't believe that that's Colton.
Well, maybe the fact that they do seem to be complete opposites actually means that it makes more sense. Because, like, you know, Caleb being with another guy like Caleb wouldn't be very exciting, and similarly, Colton being with another Colton would just think the world would end. So maybe the two of them provide the balance that the other needs.
Well, whatever it is, it seems to be working. Although, good to see that Colton's not getting the money, at least. Okay, so let's move on, and Laura predictably gives the very important idol clue now to Sierra. Previously, everyone had been burning him, and now that is not going to be the situation. Now that Tyson had played his idol last week, we're going to have another one in play, so Sierra wisely chooses to keep the clue. However, let's get into what Sierra doesn't do so wisely as things pertain to this clue. She chooses to share it with the veterans, Tyson, Monica, and Jervis. What the fuck?
Obviously, that seems like a weird thing to do, but it's consistent with that decision to side with them at the previous Tribal Council. Like, when you decide you're going to throw your lot in with Tyson and Jervis, I can understand wanting to build trust with them by showing them the clue there. How does it benefit Sierra to get the idol when she's not going to need it before the point at which it expires, which presumably is going to be the second Final Five round? Like, if she's going home, it's going to be at Final Four in all likelihood.
I agree with that. I guess I just don't see the downside in saying, all right, well, hey, guess what? It just so happened that my mom won this, and now because of that, I'm going to be the person who just basically got gifted an idol from Redemption Island. I'm going to go and get that. I don't feel like anyone's going to have, like I would say publicly, anyone got a big problem with that? Is that going to be the end of the world for someone? I would just announce that. I mean, I would ask, like, make sure everyone felt cool with that, but I feel like it would be tough for them to say no when you present it that way.
Sure, but I think they would have a big problem with it, and especially for someone who, two rounds ago, voted out her own mother, and then the previous round flipped after having flipped a few rounds before that. She doesn't really want to do anything to make herself look even more untrustworthy at this point. Like, anything she can do to manage that perception it can only be a good thing. And incidentally, this is one of the major downsides of Tyson playing his idol unnecessarily at Final Seven, where it's not like it just goes out of the game. The idol's coming back in, and had Tyson not found it there, if it had been found by Sierra or, in the disaster scenario, Hayden or Katie, that could have ended really badly for him. So it's another spot where Tyson ends up being the beneficiary of luck that just happens to go his way.
Yeah, how much do you think that should have? Because I know you disagreed strongly with him playing his idol last round, and that is an aspect of it we didn't talk about, which is the new idol coming in. How much does that add even more to your side that he should have definitely sat on it last week?
Well, in theory, it shouldn't matter because let's say Hayden does find it. As long as Katie doesn't win immunity there, or vice versa, if Katie finds it, then they have four votes, they can split it 2-2. But it's very easy to imagine, you know, Sierra getting spooked by that. Or if Sierra is minded to flip back, then if they're splitting the vote 2-2, then she can flip over. And it's not even going to Rocks anymore. She can just force a tie. You know, she doesn't have to force a tie. She can just get Tyson out right there.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't considered. And I think it definitely does start swinging the pendulum back towards sit on that idol at Final 7. Although I still am not convinced that it's 100% you must sit on it there. Although it is 100% if you're as good as Tyson is being told that he is, you definitely should be in enough control to be sitting on it there.
Sure. And if you're going to end up playing idol at Final 7 when you don't need to, and then not playing idol at Final 6 when you do need to, you've gone wrong somewhere. Like, I don't think that's in any way consistent with saying that Tyson made the right decision every single round. And I don't think you have to be results oriented to make that judgment. And if that's the accusation you're going to make, then you have to make that of Tyson, because he said himself this episode, "I wish I hadn't played the idol last round."
So I was going to say, how do you respond to people who say that's only because of the way things went down?
Well, firstly, I'd say that's because I was saying that to you at the time as the episode was airing, before, you know, we even saw the outcome of it. And secondly, you know, this isn't something which you can only say based on results. Like, I'm sure some people were saying, well, Tyson played the idol, he must have made a mistake. But I think a more nuanced version of that is, look, Tyson had reasons to think that he didn't need to play it, and there were good reasons to expect that before we saw the results of this episode, he might need to play it here. So, you know, I don't think that's a valid criticism.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely get more into this idol decision later, because I have a question I want to ask you about that later. So stay tuned for that. That's what we call a tease. All right, so let's see. Sierra just shared the clue with all of the veterans, and Tyson finds it again and quickly decides he's going to, hey, I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to either keep it to myself or I'm going to tell everyone. I think I'm going to keep it to myself.
Yeah, so Tyson gets this confessional here where it was very uncharacteristic of Tyson. He's crying. He's very emotional about having to do this for Rachel and how, you know, he needs to win this for her. It was very reminiscent of Boston Robin Redemption Island, where all of that cockiness and swagger takes a backseat for the moment to show this like more emotional side of him. And at this point, I think anyone who's clinging on to hope that Tyson might not win the season has to lock it up, I think.
Oh, how could he not when he's literally carrying his family on his back?
Yeah, it's... It's kind
this
of,
would be our catchphrase. Everyone at home can say it along with us.
It's very nice to see Tyson's vulnerable side and everything, but at the same time, like, when it's someone like Tyson who you would never associate with acting like this, it seems so forced that it's just it's unreal.
It seemed very, very out of character. Like, does not line up whatsoever in my mind with the Tyson we've seen before. Like, the closest thing I think we've ever seen to Tyson's being serious is when he's talking to Coach, when Coach is having that big moment with him, I would say.
Yeah, it's like, this is the same guy who 40 minutes later in the episode is boasting at tribal council, like, telling Katie your seat's over there on the jury.
Yeah.
You know, this is so discordant. It's, and again, you know, going back to the other thing, the fact that they include this scene to paint Tyson in this positive light, you know, that is obvious proof in my mind that he's being set up as a favorite here.
Oh, I mean, as if we needed any more of that, but yeah, it's a done deal.
Right. Now, at this point, I want to ask you, do you think they're being successful here, if that is what they're trying to do? Because I've seen so many people say, as if it was like an individual thing. I understand that they're wanting to make Tyson look good, but all of my friends who watch the show are saying to me that they really hate Tyson now. And I've seen multiple people say that, so it's not a kind of unique reaction, I don't think.
Yeah, I've heard a lot just from the filthy, filthy casuals that I talk to. A lot of love for Sierra, too. People are liking Hayden and Sierra and not so much liking Tyson. So, well, in my mind, I would say, of course, they're doing a great job at making Tyson the clear winner, but maybe that's just because we can't help but watch it through the lens of people who know what to be looking for with winner edits. And I can understand why, for the aforementioned filthy, filthy casuals, Tyson wouldn't be overly likable.
Yeah, to some extent, it has to be the ultimate challenge for the editors to make Tyson a palatable winner for the majority of the audience, because he's someone who the people who like him love him because he's snarky and sarcastic and just rips into people without hesitation. And the people who hate him for exactly that reason. So if you're going to dial him down at all, you're going to end up with this very flat, uninteresting Tyson, which I think is largely what we saw for the first half of the season.
Yeah, and so maybe to me this signals, can we just, if Tyson does in fact go on to win the game, throw out the idea of a winner edit? Can we just have the Tyson Apostle variety hour every episode where it's just him being goofy and being endearing and so forth? Like, you don't have to show him being a bad guy, but you don't have to try to force him into being the good guy. And let us just appreciate Tyson for what he is and what he's best at.
Yeah, it's like they have to keep up this fiction that the game can only be won by someone who is uncontroversial and likable and nice to everyone and all of that stuff. And that's just not the case a lot of the time. You know, you'd expect someone with Tyson's bravado to meet some kind of downfall eventually. It looks like that's not going to happen this season, though. And so when he manages to avoid that, I think you just have to embrace it and show him as he truly is.
Yeah, I agree. So let's move on. Jervis wins the immunity challenge here, as well as the reward, and gets to eat ice cream back at camp with not one but two people. He picks Monica first, and again, it's Jervis, so I don't know if he even knew to expect that he was going to have to pick two people, so I have a hard time berating him here. But I definitely do not have a hard time berating his second choice, and that is Tyson, leaving Sierra back with Hayden and Katie.
Yeah, that was just a basic mistake. By the way, this is why I like the fact that they're combining immunity with reward, because if someone in the majority is trying to win it to keep it out of the hands of the minority, then they're forced to still make a choice and potentially reveal their hand and their future intentions. You know, had they not been coupled like this, maybe CO doesn't end up flipping in the end. Who knows?
Why is he not going, all right, I don't want any ice cream, I want to give it to everyone else?
I mean,
if they're letting Monica do it, they have to let him do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Although maybe after Monica did it, they realized the flaw in that and maybe wouldn't let him do that now. Although, once they set the precedent with letting Monica do it, I think they have to let him do it as well.
I think it's the latter. I think they must let him do it, and I think the answer to why he did not do it is because he's Jervis. He doesn't do those things. Yeah. Nonetheless, Jervis is immune here. And now Hayden goes to work, basically, where he knows he's got to flip people. Obviously, rocks is a prospect he would entertain, but he'd much rather get four. So he goes for Sierra and Jervis here. Now, I didn't know if Jervis was necessarily, when Monica's sitting right there, the person I would have been going for, because it seems like, and maybe this is just because of the edit again, but it seems like Monica is the much more likely vet to flip on Tyson. Do you disagree with that?
Yeah, it's tough because watching the episode from home, we see these secret conversations between Tyson and Jervis, and it's apparent that they're very close. In the moment, though, I'm not sure it's so clear that it's not like Tyson and Monica or Jervis and Monica or some other combination of that, or even just the three of them as a group. Obviously, Tyson and Jervis spent more time together after the swap when they were away from Monica and they were with Hayden and Sierra. But I don't know. It's weird because you have to think that Tyson understands that Hayden's coming after him, and he would have understood that even if Hayden hadn't told him to his face. And so it's not like you have to worry about the plan of getting back to him or whatever. The only issue is if Sierra says she's on board and the wrong person is around to see that, then maybe Tyson is aware that he needs to put in some work to flip Sierra back.
Or Tyson's aware that he needs to play his idol. And maybe he's going for Jervis instead of Monica because he feels like Jervis is the one who is much more likely to be not okay with second place. I could see him being out there saying, Monica's likely all right with this if she feels like she can't win. Whereas Jervis, even after his demonstration when he's trying to get credit that Hayden's giving Tyson as he's trying to throw Tyson under the bus the night after tribal council, maybe he feels like, hey, Jervis, if you really do want to win, you can't go with Tyson. And that's why he's appealing to Jervis, even though it looks like Jervis is Tyson's closest ally.
Yeah, he might also think, given Jervis's reputation coming out of the first season, the criticism that all of Pagong received at the time and ever since has been they weren't able to play the game. They just sat idly by while the Tuggies formed an alliance and just ran them over. And so he might think that Jervis doesn't want to play into that criticism again, and he wants to kind of reshape his reputation. It turns out that that's true, but maybe not in the way that he was hoping, where if you watch Jervis' secret scenes, he seems to be very happy with second place in that he's setting these benchmarks for himself. Like, I just want to make the merge. I just want to make it to final six so I can get past where I went out last time. I just want to make it to day 30 and now the next one's a final three. He doesn't seem to have winning the, actually winning the game as a goal in mind, except when he gets there. And so maybe he's just not thinking that far ahead.
Yeah, I've known, I've said several weeks now that I thought he was playing a lot like scoop and play in Philippines, where it was like checkpoint gameplay, which is definitely not the way one wants to be playing. Although I get it, when you're one of those early season people who finally gets their second shot after, you know, over a decade, and you're like, I just want to make sure that I don't do anything stupid to mess this up and make sure that this lasts for as long as it can, rather than I want to win.
Yeah, and Jervis as well does seem to think that maybe he could actually beat Tyson, which we can make fun of him for, but that might be a more defensible thing to think about Tyson than with maybe anyone else who's been in Tyson's role before.
And not only that, maybe anyone else who's been in Jervis's role before, where Jervis knows he is an entertainer, he's a people pleaser. Like, that was his whole strategy his first time out there. And I think he's really good. I think he's fantastic, but much better than Tyson is with, like, the interpersonal relationships. Not on any kind of legitimate level, but I think superficially, at least, people are always cool with Jervis.
Yeah, I think that illustrates the kind of distinction that you have to make when people talk about the social game, where Jervis is just a very sociable guy who likes getting along with people, and they all seem to love him. But Tyson is playing a social game where it's like he is forming bonds with people so that he can use those to maneuver his way to the end with a view to winning once he gets there. And I'm not sure that Jervis is thinking that far ahead. Also, maybe it's just that if you're Tyson here and you know that Hayden's going to do whatever he has to do, maybe you just get Jervis and Monica to shadow him so that he can't have a private conversation with people. And if that's the case, maybe Jervis was just the one who happened to be there at the time.
Yeah, and honestly, I would not be overly comfortable if I was in Tyson's spot unless I myself was shadowing Hayden all day.
Right.
To stay with him.
You need to have Hayden and Sierra on lockdown at all times.
Right, and it doesn't matter. Like, he's still not going to care. He's still going to make the same pitch, or at least I would in his shoes. But at least if you're there, you can defend yourself and make it far less likely that they are going to actually end up flipping onto his side against you. So let's get into Tribal Council, because this is where most of the action happens. You know, we get a great confessional from Hayden about how he's really going to let loose at Tribal Council. And you know it's going to be a good one when you get to Tribal Council and it's 8:43 Eastern time and you still got another 17 minutes to go. So let's see. Jeff starts asking basic questions, and we get a nice hint that something may go down here as the veterans keep referencing that Sierra is the fourth one in their group.
Yeah, well, they don't do it explicitly, but Hayden manages to twist everything they say to create the impression that that's what they're thinking, and this is what Hayden has to do here. Like, he knows that he needs to convert this somehow, and Sierra isn't on board at this point. He has the duration of Tribal Council to make this happen, and so he has to use whatever material he's given, or if he's not given any, to create it for himself.
Right, yeah, and this is, at least when you are on the bottom, and this is something we've talked about before, I think as it pertained to the Three Amigos last season, Eddie made this point on air, where he's like, at least when you're on the bottom, no one's really lying to you, and you know, you're basically, it's almost a free roll. Granted, it's the last place you want to be, but you've got nowhere to go but up. And Hayden knows that at least at this Tribal Council, either he's going to leave there or he's going to have to do something to make that, to make sure that that doesn't happen. And he has a lot of freedom with what he can say to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Sure. Well, what do you make of the way that Hayden went about doing this and the way that Tyson and Joe has responded to it in the moment?
It's interesting. And I'll complete it. So I've only actually watched this episode as I was watching it live. I haven't gotten a chance to rewatch it yet, but obviously, as anyone who's following me on Twitter knows, the entire time I was just going nuts thinking, virtually, granted, not being certain, but being quite confident we were going to see Rox and that this was going to be successful. I think if I hadn't had that in the back of my mind, I would have a more objectively clear picture. But knowing that it was going to work, it was really just setting me into, oh my God, Hayden Moss is the greatest player of all time, and whatever he's doing is the optimal line here. I think he certainly, it goes without saying, or it should go without saying, he played it phenomenally well. This is something very few people are capable of doing. And I think it's just so inspiring to me, like the sense of urgency and the finality that it was instilling in the other people, and really obeying the 48 laws of power and appealing to their self-interest. I think that is the way to play this game. That is how you get people on your side. And there are very few people who are better suited to do that than Hayden Moss that have ever stepped foot on reality TV, in my mind.
We can debate the specifics of that in a little bit, because I think I'll have a few quibbles with you there, but... Yeah, I actually was frustrated by CBS again here, where I went on the website and they had this thing which was labeled, Tribal Council extended scene. I thought, oh, fantastic, we're going to get to see more details of this. And then I watched, and it was just the Tribal Council. I was like, really? You're going to do that to me?
And just now, as you were explaining that to me, my eyes lit up as I heard about this Tribal Council. And then I realized, oh, wait, he wouldn't be telling this.
It was completely for nothing, yeah. But yeah, I thought that in addition to taking everything that Tyson and Jervis said and using it against them, he also presented an active case for why she should flip. Like, if you do this, there is the light at the end of the tunnel. You might, you're going to get to the end, and you'll have a great case to make for yourself once you get there.
Right, and it's all true. This is the beauty of Hayden's position, which is it's completely true.
Yeah, and it goes without saying, I think it always helps when you can make it look like you're convinced by what you're saying, and the best way for that to happen is if it's actually true and you believe it.
Right, no, absolutely. Now, let's not go too crazy just yet with Hayden, because I think he definitely got at least a bit of an assist here from Jeff Probst. What'd you make of Probst? And that actually remind me, I want to also answer how I thought Tyson and Jervis did after this, but what do you think of Probst? Did you think he went overboard and kind of guiding Sierra into, so hey, why don't you go and flip over here and go to Rocks?
Look, this gets said about Jeff Probst a lot. Like, I remember back in Nicaragua at the Final Six again, where Jane knew he was going home, and he basically said, hey, why don't you three just force a tie against the others? I think, you know, again, despite what CBS might be trying to tell us, we only get to see a very small portion of the Tribal Council, and he's going to be asking these same kind of leading questions to everyone, and he can't get the kind of answers that we want to see on the show unless he asks this type of question. So, and realistically, like, as we always say, most people's minds are made up going into Tribal Council. Jeff Probst making some kind of comment that makes them think about something, okay, maybe it registers at the back of their mind, but that's very rarely going to actually affect their decision at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's the thing, is people are so rarely changing their votes at Tribal Council. Granted, I think we saw three people change their votes at Tribal Council this week, with Hayden calling that audible on Monica, or at least that's how it was presented. And then, of course, Sierra, do you agree that she was not going into that Tribal Council planning on voting with Hayden and Katie?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think she was closer to flipping than maybe she had been 1 or 2 hours ago, but I think she intended to stick with the line and vote for Hayden.
Yeah, and I think it was, again, like I said last week, if we do in fact see Rocks, it is 100% because Hayden Moss is such a good player, and I think that's absolutely what happened again here. But maybe it was only 95% that, and 5% how bad Tyson and Jervis played, or we can debate the weighting on that. What did you make of how Tyson and Jervis handled this once it became clear that Sierra was at least entertaining or at least listening to Hayden?
Yeah, I think that they never really took seriously the idea that she might actually flip here, and if they had, you certainly don't make a potentially disastrous blunder in keeping Hayden over Caleb last week. But I think once they realized that this might actually be happening, Tyson, you know, he put in a good deal of effort to try and convert them there. You know, I have to think that Tyson's desperation might have shone through, and I'm not sure there's anything he could have done to really change that. I think once a light bulb goes on in her head and it kind of detonates for her that this is what I actually have to do, whatever Tyson might have said, though, I'm not sure it would have worked.
Well, let me ask you this then, because this is something I was thinking about earlier. We know Tyson has this new hidden immunity idol. What if, when it becomes clear that Sierra's thinking about, at least, you know, she's as I said, she's listening to Hayden, and that's never a good thing when you want to have her vote locked down. Why not, if you're Tyson, pull out that immunity idol and say, look, Jervis is immune, he has the necklace. I have this new idol, I'm going to play it tonight. If you guys even consider going to Rocks, you're going to have to put your votes on Monica, and if we get to that point, Monica's then going to be immune, and she's not going to have to draw a rock either. So Sierra, if you go with that side, it's just going to be you and Katie drawing a rock, and guess what? Even if you draw the good one, now we're going to boot you out the next round, or you can come with us, and we'll just take Hayden out 4-2.
Yeah, and that would have been the perfect thing to do, and it illustrates, again, had Tyson not found the idol there, that wouldn't even have been a possibility for him, and he would have had to go to Rocks. So it's like, okay, so he gets bailed out of his decision to play the idol the previous round by finding it again, and then when he needs to play it this round, he doesn't do it. If he makes it through this round, in all likelihood, he's not going to need the idol. So it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's not consistent with the way he's been playing so far. Think of it in these terms, right? So Tyson goes from playing what appeared to be a very dominant game in the mold of Boston Rob or Kim or whoever, and people were lauding him and saying he's playing perfectly, and, you know, Tyson is... Some people were saying that Tyson is the greatest of all time, which those people are imbeciles, but in any case. So, you know, Tyson was receiving a lot of praise here, and he somehow manages in two episodes to go from being this dominant figure who can convert that into a win on his third time to, you know, miss playing two idols and putting himself in a spot where he has to take a 1-3 shot at going home there. And that is just, that is absurd. I don't think we've seen anyone willingly throw away that kind of equity in the game before.
Yeah, that is unacceptable.
We've seen it with at least one of Tyson's first two appearances, but outside of Tyson, I'm not sure we see this from anyone else. And you can say that maybe he thought the error might be mitigated by the fact that even if he does go out here, he goes to Redemption Island and can maybe win his way back in. But even if he does that in challenges which have seemed to be relatively fair for the past few instances, when he comes back in, he's going to be at least a 3-2 disadvantage. So he's going to have to win out again to get to the finals, at which point I'm not sure he even wins then. Like, because Hayden's going to be there with him in that scenario, and I think people would, if they're voting for the best game, have to reward it to Hayden.
Yeah, but and also Tyson's the one who voted plenty of them out, unlike most other Redemption Island table runners.
Right, so it wouldn't even be a case of Tyson is so well-liked that the fact that he wasn't playing the game doesn't matter. He was playing the game, then loses at the game, and then just randomly finds his way to the end again. Like that, at that point, right. He can't make any kind of coherent case for himself. He can't say, I play the game best. He can't say, I'm the most likable. I develop the closest bonds with you. He's just kind of stuck.
Right. He can say, I won out on Redemption Island and then won out in here. And that's that. And despite my own best efforts, and despite punting away a cakewalk to the end. I think that's really what it comes down to this round is Tyson went from such a smashing position to having it to draw a rock himself at Final Six. And like you said, absurd, unacceptable, just preposterous to me that someone who is getting so much love, and granted not from us, but from the people who, and the people I mentioned at the top of the show who were saying that we had gone so far overboard in berating him and our praise for Hayden was just because we were total fangirls. I really question the people who still, because I'm still getting comments from these kind of people saying that we are the ones misinterpreting this and that Tyson is clearly playing better and that Hayden is the one who's running good and that Tyson had the great bonds when they mattered. And I think that's complete horseshit. And I don't know what you're seeing other than spoilers several months ago that got you in this mindset.
Well, even if it's not just that, like, I think it's clear at this point that Tyson, despite his best efforts, is going to win this game. And that is going to be the perfect illustration of, firstly, how the winner doesn't always play the best game. The winner doesn't always play perfectly. Like, you can say winners have made mistakes that decrease their chances of winning. So, yeah, I think this is perfect proof of just how much luck there actually is in Survivor. You hear people say all the time things like, whoever won must have played the best game, or because they won, every decision they made must have been right and there were no mistakes. Things which are just predicated on this idea that Survivor is deterministic and there's no luck involved. This is the most obvious and blatant illustration you can possibly have of just how much luck there is involved. It's not even something where you can say someone got a bad table draw with their casting or whatever. This is where, you know, Tyson put himself in a spot where if he draws the right rock, he's out of the game, right? It's literally a roll of the dice, pretty much. And so this idea that, you know, Tyson would have made the right call there or made the wrong call just based on the results just doesn't sit well with me.
Right, no, totally back up exactly what you just said. There is a tremendous amount of luck in any given game of Survivor, especially compounded by the fact that there's so little time between when all of the information is out there, i.e. when the immunity is over, and when you actually have to go and vote. It's not like Big Brother where you have 5 days between the veto competition and the vote to make something happen.
Yeah, and to his credit, I think Tyson has done quite a few things well so far. You know, he managed to draw Jervis away from the guy that he had a pregame alliance with and turn him into, you know, his closest ally and someone who is seemingly willing to lose to him in the finals, which, you know, is something that deserves a lot of praise. He also, after the swap, he realized that he needed a backup plan, so he formed this new alliance with the loved ones who didn't have anyone left in the game still. So yeah, he has certainly improved and shown that he's worthy of coming back for a third time. The trouble is that that's only useful if it's in the service of getting you to the end and winning. And so far, he's done a lot of things in the past few episodes to really jeopardize that goal.
Right. Oh, I think Tyson, there's no doubt about the fact that he is a much improved player who has at least had his priorities right and so forth. It's just a matter of, I question his execution and his decision-making in several different spots, particularly over these last couple of episodes. But yeah, absolutely. has done a lot of things well and has definitely gotten a lot better at the game.
Okay, I mean, I don't think he was starting from a great kind of bar there initially, but yeah, it's just like his entire thing. We, you know, going back to Talking Trees and potentially in Heroes vs. Villains, if he had made it that far, is I have to take out the people who are most threatening to me. And yet, so he does that with Brendan, he does that here with Aris, and yet when the time comes to do it to Hayden, he backs away and gets duly punished for it.
Right, and again, it's kind of like when we were harping on why are we not taking out Hayden, why are we not taking out Hayden? If you think Caleb makes this gets Sierra to flip here, I think you're dead wrong.
Okay, well, I think his worry might be that Caleb has actually done this before, right? Yeah, with the Brad vote where he just switched things up at the last minute. But the crucial difference there is that everyone was pretty much on board with getting Brad out, especially the people that he needed to flip over. Whereas here, he needs to really put the work in to get Sierra to flip, and I'm not sure that Caleb would have that in him. If Sierra is going to flip here, it's going to require some kind of extraordinary achievement on the part of whoever it is on the other side that's trying to turn her, and Hayden is the only one who's really remotely capable of that, in my mind.
Right, I agree.
Yeah, but going back to the original point quickly, you made an excellent comparison when we were talking off-air. A common criticism that gets leveled at people who think about the game in the way that we like to is, well, this is a very kind of male-centric view of the game. You tend to give not enough credit to people like Sandra or Natalie White, for whom, you know, making big moves and being in control isn't a viable or sensible option. But here, I think we would make the same kind of arguments that we would make about Sandra, which are, even though he's going to go on to win, in all likelihood, that doesn't mean that he necessarily played the best game by default or by definition.
Right. Oh, I totally stand by this. I compared it. I may have even done so on Twitter, where I'm sure people are following both of us at Colin Stone and at MC_Usher, where it's not anything to do with the way Sandra goes about influencing people. It's everything to do with Sandra's own tactical gameplay, and that's what I really take issue with, and that's exactly what we're taking issue here with Tyson with, which is, if he does go on to win, which it looks like he is going to, and which Sandra has done twice, I would say it is largely despite his own best efforts, and that's what I'm taking issue with. It's not his style of gameplay, it's not how he's interacting with the other people, he's having these really clear strategic paths laid out right in front of him, and he's actively disregarding them for massively inferior lines.
Sure.
Like Sandra does. And much like Sandra has demonstrated she does over and over and over again. Yeah, so this is something I know we've both been excited to talk about for a while now. After seeing this episode, and after seeing entering the final seven round, we were saying, well, this is really going to make or break it for Hayden, and he knocked that one out of the park. Obviously, I don't think words could even do justice to how well he played this round. So let's get into something I know we're both very excited to talk about. And we were talking 2 weeks ago about how Final Seven was going to be the make or break episode for Hayden, and he smashed that one. And now, of course, this last episode, he has completely knocked it out of the park. What do you make of what you've seen out of Hayden these last two episodes, and what does that signal to you about Hayden as a reality player in general?
Okay, so going back further than that, I still think it was a mistake not to vote out Tyson at Final Eight when it seemed like Sierra and her mother would have been on board with it. And if you listen to Caleb's exit interviews this week, he's been saying that he was pushing for that at Final Eight, but Hayden declined on the grounds that he still trusted Tyson, which, if true, is obviously a big mark against Hayden, although it's unclear how much of that is hindsight on Caleb's part. Given he did that, though, I think he recovered as well as he possibly could have done. And the fact that he even managed to make it go to Rocks this week is absurd. I mean, we talk about it in these kind of lofty terms because we just never see this before. It's very rare that someone on the bottom in the way Hayden is, with his kind of reputation, is able to turn things around like that.
Yeah, it's legitimately insane. And I think I absolutely agree that given what he knows now, he would definitely have gone for Tyson at Final Eight when so many people seem to be on board with it. I still can't fault him for thinking Sierra would recognize she has no choice but to side with him at Final Seven and take a hit out on one of the veterans there. And I am not going to take away as much credit for Sierra making such a dumb play. And people are assigning Tyson all the credit in the world for, oh, he had such an influence over Sierra. I think it was just she was sketched out after the round where her mom got voted out and wasn't thinking straight. But like you said, couldn't have recovered any more flawlessly after that. And getting to force Rocks at Final Six, in all practical terms, I think Hayden was a 1-in-3 shot where if Tyson draws that rock, Hayden has won the game and has won both Survivor and Big Brother. And after the way things went down at Final 7, to one round later have that be your prospect is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's. I think you can say that Tyson might have played a better game than Hayden in some kind of absolute sense. But if you look at their relative starting positions, where Tyson was on a tribe of returning players which was most likely to do well in the challenges and where he can have these kind of bonds with people, and where the metagame, I think, favors him to some extent. Obviously, he wasn't a part of the Iris, Jervis, and Tina thing, but he can at least work his way in there. Whereas with Hayden, it's almost like the metagame set up in a way where it's the worst possible thing for him, because not only is he on the outside of any kind of Survivor social scene that there might be, but also he's from this other show, so people have this experience of him playing, but he doesn't have any of the kind of bonds with them that they might have from that, right?
Right, right.
And people know that he's a Big Brother winner, that they'll have been able to see a season before, you know, so he comes in there with, in theory, the biggest target on his back out of anybody, and I think that plays into his decision early on to just lie low, go with the flow, not be seen as a decision maker, and so you can understand him wanting to sit with Brad for the first half or sit with Tyson after that. And I think he made his move possibly at the wrong time, although, like you said, it's entirely rational to think that Sierra should and would want to go after Tyson at Final 7 still. Like, if she wanted to do it at Final 8, why not at Final 7, right?
Right, no, exactly.
Especially since she was the one who was on board with voting out her own mother, right? It's not like they had to work her over really hard to get her to do that. They weren't kind of coercing her into going with them. It was something that she actively embraced. But in any case, and despite being in that starting position on the Loved Ones tribe where he can't form bonds with any of the returning players and they know that he is the biggest threat to them once they get to the merge, he somehow manages to survive that. He makes it deep into the game, and then even though he makes maybe a questionable mistake at Final 8, he rebounds perfectly and then, like you said, puts himself in a spot where he is 1-3 to go from being on the outside of this tightly controlled alliance to actually having a shot at $1 million. And I think if he makes it to the final three, he would, I don't think it's any question, I think he would win. And to be a winner of two different shows in those circumstances, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's insane.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And for that reason, Dom, and I know this is probably going to take a lot of heat this week, Will Kirby, Dan Giesling, Kim Spradlin, I'm not going to put him there. Anyone else who has ever played either show, I will take Hayden Moss over them.
I wouldn't be that hasty, I don't think. I still think there are lots of people who, if they came back for a second time, would be able to equip themselves in the way that Hayden has done and be worthy of that kind of top spot. But in the absence of that kind of evidence, I am perfectly comfortable putting Hayden very high up. Maybe not as high as you, but still right in that pantheon.
Well, okay, that is exactly, you hit it right on the head, which is why I have him so high up. In the absence of evidence from literally anyone else, I have seen so much great stuff out of Hayden Moss that we just have, there's just no way that any Survivor player, including Boston Rob, he's not a consideration for me that I would definitely take Hayden above Boston Rob. I think it's gotta be limited mostly to Big Brother players, and there's no one after seeing Hayden play both games so well, that I could reasonably say I would definitely be taking over Hayden, and that's why I have him so high, behind those three that I listed before.
Yeah, so even though Hayden is likely going to finish in like fifth or sixth or something like that, and Tyson's going to be our champion, I still think you can make the case that Hayden has played better for him than Tyson has played for himself.
I don't think that's even a case one needs to make. I think that speaks for itself.
Right.
Yeah, all right. So obviously Katie, Sierra, and Tyson are the ones who end up drawing rocks here, and Katie draws the white rock. Yes, that is not a purple rock. I told you idiots it was specific to Marquesas that was a purple rock. Don't always call it the purple rock. Anyway,
she'll be white rock right here.
Yeah, sorry. It was a very personal issue for me. I was very much anticipating seeing that. Let's talk a little bit about Katie. You know, she hasn't lost on Redemption Island. I suppose she can still make a run there, so we'll put that off. What did you think about her edit, given what her outcome is? Because it seemed to me, at least we only have Pascal's edit to draw on, as far as someone who meets the same fate as Katie, but it seemed like much more of an idled out edit, much more of a Kelly Sharbaugh and Alexis Jones and Stacey Kimball and what have you.
Right, and again, you can understand why they do it, because they don't want to create this idea that someone left the game unfairly, someone that the audience might actually care about and be invested in. But at the same time, when the victim of this is Katie, it takes so much of the punch out of it, where it's just, okay, you have this almost unprecedented moment in the history of the show, and it's Katie who goes, and it's just, well, okay, great, but if that had happened to Sierra or Hayden or, God forbid, Tyson, then, you know, this is getting talked about even more than it already is.
Right. I was thinking to myself, especially just thinking about Pascal's edit, and that thinking back to that scene that we flagged up a couple episodes ago where we thought the Rocks were getting foreshadowed when they made a point to say, oh, Sierra looks so smug, like she's got the good one, when they were playing that game back at camp. I thought it was definitely going to be Sierra who got rocked out here.
Yeah, and even though I've actually taken Sierra a fair bit over the past few episodes, I was really rooting hard for that to happen there. Actually, I would have loved to see Tyson get punished as well, just for, yeah, when someone is willing to punt the game away like that, they should, the other team should be able to swoop in and close from there, but sadly it wasn't to be. I do think, though, that in their defense, it would be hard for them to edit Katie as some kind of big dynamic character when that just isn't really part of her personality, it doesn't seem.
How dare you?
I mean, I like Katie. I'm obviously very sorry for her under the circumstances, but, you know, I think it would be hard to paint her as some kind of big focal character of the season when she was on the outs for most of it and was mostly just wasn't playing passively necessarily, but was just looking for a way to get herself back in and was doing that by not causing drama in the way that Hayden is.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was very much just circumstantial that Pascal got his edit and Katie got her edit. They both happened to draw a rock.
Yeah, like Pascal is the kindly old man who's also apparently a pervert in real life, but leaving that aside.
Yeah. Well, hang on. Do people know? People who don't know about this, Pascal, some weird shit went down with Pascal where he got caught, like, engaging in some kind of sexual conduct with one of the people who also worked at the courthouse, just for people who are unaware of that. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, but so I can see why Pascal would kind of get this great edit or whatever thing, but, you know, it's 23 seasons later now, different circumstances, different times, and as sad as I am for Katie, you can kind of see why that happened.
Yeah, no, exactly. You can definitely see that why that happened for Katie. Let's talk quickly, because I don't think this is going to take a lot of discussion. Was anyone here wrong to want to go to Rocks in their situation?
I don't think so. I think Tyson was wrong to put himself in a spot where he could be going to Rocks.
Yeah.
But given that he is, I think it makes sense for all six of them.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Especially since, you know, three of them aren't actually going to Rocks in the first place.
Right. Oh, I mean, obviously it's not even a consideration. Hayden's fist pumping when he gets the votes put on him, obviously, once he goes to Rocks.
Right, and for that reason, I'll ask you now, do you think that when it maybe became apparent that Sierra was actually flipping, should Tyson have maybe put some votes on Katie instead, so that when everyone draws Rocks, if he's on, you know, if his side wins out, then Hayden might be going home?
If he knows that it's going to Rocks, then definitely. If he does not know, then I think he has to think that Sierra is still sticking with the plan, regardless of what's gone down at Tribal Council, just knowing how infrequent it is that anyone even considers changing their vote.
Right, and if she's not planning on flipping, when Tyson suddenly calls an audible, it has to, you know, she has to think, like, why would he be doing that unless he thinks that I am flipping? At which point it makes more sense for her to flip, and it, you know. So, yeah, I don't think that was, if that was wrong, it can't be too wrong.
Right, no, I agree. And it's also like, he wants to maximize when the play works, especially when he thinks the play is going to work a huge percentage of the time. And it's not even in question that you have to go for Hayden there over Katie when you think the play is going to work that often. So one other thing that I wanted to bring up is, I was watching Know-It-Alls last night, and Rob said that he could never live with himself if he ever lost by drawing a rock. And I just want to say, I feel like that's almost the backwards mentality I would have if I was in a lot of these people's situation here, which is, in this instance, I obviously understand the general sentiment. You don't want to apply and finally get on this show that you've loved for your entire life, and then, like we heard from Cochran about why he didn't want to go to Rocks and all of that and yada yada. I feel like going to Rocks, first of all, is a very noble death. I'll put it in number one. Number two, quite often, if you're going to Rocks, it's because that is clearly the correct play for you, and you should be embarrassed if you're not going to Rocks in that situation, in a situation where you should be going to Rocks.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised to hear Rob say that, but at the same time, that's kind of in keeping with what we expect from him. I think there's that kind of, not caution, maybe that's the wrong word, but you can see why he would want to make the safe play, because, you know, if he draws the rock and goes home, his game's over at that point, whereas if he doesn't and is in what seems to be a bad position, he can at least try to work his way out of it. You know, if you have enough confidence in your own skills that you think you can play your way out of that spot, then I can understand. But by the same token, if you have that confidence, then why are you in the spot in the first place?
Right. I just feel like I phrased it very poorly and cyclically the first time, which is obviously if you're not going to Rocks when it's good to go to Rocks, you should be embarrassed. What I mean is, when the situation calls for rocks, it's typically because it's like, there are two really clear sides, and this is going to have major long-term implications. And if you then don't go to rocks, if you're the guy who doesn't make that happen, you're torching your own game, you're torching the rest of your team's game, and it's just not the spot you ever want to be in when rocks is the alternative. When drawing rocks, especially when it's going to work out for you more often than not, as it would be in Savai, or if you're in Tyson's spot here in this instance.
Sure, and I will say that in maybe an even more shocking turn of events than what happened this episode, we were actually going to record last night after the episode had aired, but we just became sidetracked by how radiant Kim was, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, people say that Kim is boring or whatever. Those people are wrong. Kim is hilarious. And I'm not sure it's because of anything she does intentionally, but just the way that she has like this Dan Giesling style but much more credible way of like just avoiding controversy or saying anything negative about anyone. It's just so great. Like I was trying to think, what questions can I send in that might get Kim to like be angry? Like someone who does that has shown that they can truly tilt people.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. It will never leave my memory. One of the defining moments of this podcast is asking Kim about Leaf, and her response was just, "Oh, Leaf is so kind." just finding some way to say something not terrible.
Yeah, like there was one point where she said, "Rob said something." She said something. Rob had a kind of jokey reply, and she said, "No, I'm not saying that Tyson isn't as good of a Survivor player as me, accompanied by that delightful love of hers." So I'm thinking, Kim, look, okay, if you won't say that, I will. You are a much better Survivor player than Tyson. You know it. I imagine Tyson knows it as well. Everyone watching knows it. You can just say it, okay? No one's going to think badly of you. You don't have to offend anyone. But I remember Rob saying that if he wins the podcast awards, he's going to do some kind of Survivor roast, and he should invite Kim on for that. Like, the idea of, you were saying to me, like, the idea of Kim doing a roast is this untapped sketch comedy goldmine right there.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I hope Kim doing a roast would be like an episode of The Twilight Zone.
At some point for like some kind of anniversary podcast or whatever, we should invite Kim on for an episode and just try to get her to say mean things about people. Like Kim, what do you think of Enron? Well, maybe we made some questionable decisions, but well, actually, that's something where everyone hates it, so she could be on board. But something like, you know, Kim, a lot of people have strong views about gay marriage. What's your view? Well, I know that people do disagree about it. Like, Kim, that's not an answer, okay? Just so you get her to say something.
Yeah, that'd be good times. I'm definitely in. Dom, anything else we want to get to for this week?
I think that's good, except to take one further shot at all the people who discredited Hayden and were bigging up Tyson.
Yeah, what's up now, guys? Let us know. Hey, if you think we're wildly off base, let us know. We're always happy to answer criticisms from the people who disagree. Leave a comment on the blog post or something, or tweet at us or anything along those lines. But I think that's basically going to do it for this week. Dom, unless you have anything else.
No, I guess we had closing thoughts on Caleb. I guess, where do we see the game going from here? It's pretty much wrapped up, I think. You know,
Tyson's going to win.
Tyson, Jervis, Monica, Final 3 with Tyson taking it home.
Yeah, I think Jervis is, I don't even know or care who's going to get second place.
Yeah, I guess maybe the more interesting question then is, what happens before then? So who comes back from Redemption Island and who gets slated for fifth and fourth?
I'm going to go with Laura Moret winning out on Redemption Island again, unless she lays down for Sierra. What do you think?
Well, actually, in the preview, it showed Tina laying down for Katie, so that's a more immediate concern. Do you think that's going to come to pass?
If it gets down to the two of them, I could see it coming to pass, yeah.
Yeah, and I could see Laura doing that for Sierra as well. Like, that would make sense, you know, because that whole thing that Laura had about wanting to protect her daughter and everything, that could be seen as ironic given the fact that Sierra is eventually the one who votes her out. But it would make even more sense if the closure to that storyline is Sierra gets voted out, Sierra and Laura are the last two in a duel or whatever, and she has to make that call about whether to lay down a sword, and I think she would go through with that then.
Yeah, I agree totally. One other question before we get out of here. Who do you have winning fan favorite as things stand right now?
Yeah, this is something that I had been meaning to bring up every single week, but because it wasn't there, I forgot, which is the sprint player of the week thing. Has it even been there this season? I don't think it has.
It has not.
So is that just not something they're doing anymore? Because as far as I know, it didn't actually affect the final results of who wins player of the season. So maybe they just thought it was a waste of time.
Yeah, the only thing that it actually did do was spoil what was about to happen at Tribal Council.
Yeah, and they found more direct ways of doing that this season, so they don't need it anymore. it's an odd one. Like, maybe Sierra could, if what you're saying about people's reactions is correct.
Yeah, who I don't see who else it's going to be besides Sierra as things stand now.
Maybe Monica could have a shot. Like, I don't...
Maybe, who'd you say?
Monica, because, you know, she's playing... Yeah, you know, she's a nice, giving, caring mom, and she's bringing all these challenges and things. But she's being portrayed as annoying, and then she just dropped off the face of the earth.
Crazy talk.
Who else could it be? Like, maybe Hayden could have the Big Brother contingent vote for him.
Maybe Hayden and maybe Tyson if they lay it on super thick.
It's never going to be Tyson, I don't think.
All right, I would take Tyson against Monica heads up, but I think it's going to be Sierra.
That's fine, but like I would take Hayden against Tyson heads up.
Okay, you got action.
It's not even like this is an irrelevant question, because I don't think there's any clear front runner here. Like, maybe it is Sierra, but I again, without these Player of the Week polls, it's hard to actually gauge that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Sierra. And let me ask you, because this is something I know we discussed a little bit off air, which should become one of our new catch. Oh, we were talking off air. I feel like we say it 20 times an episode. Is Sierra coming back?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, maybe the franchise ends soon and... they only have one All-Star season left and they want to save it for the real big hitters. But if there's any kind of Fans versus Favorites 3 or you know, God forbid, or anything like that, there are just so few viable female contestants who haven't already played multiple times that I could definitely see Sierra having a spot booked up there.
Yeah, definitely agree. All right, I think that's going to do it. So subscribe on iTunes. Dom, for the final time, anything else to get to today?
No, I think we're good.
All right, so let's just get out of here. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we'll talk to you very soon. Take it easy, guys.